This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 452, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 452. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Paul Montgomery.
Hey there.
And Josh Flanagan.
How y'all doing?
We are a fanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book they read. We call that the Pick of the Week. We talk about that in this here podcast, along with other books of the week, other topics of interest. Fun stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show. We'll be talking about the things that happened in this week's books. So if you're worried about spoilers, pause the show and come back. When the coast is clear, you won't want to find out that Wolverine is dying. Although it's in the title of the book. It's in the title of the book.
Oh.
This week, Josh A. Flanagan had the pick.
That is my middle initial. That is correct. The pick of the week was a tough pick of the week because there were many books that were worthy of being pick of the week. That is my thesis, but it is not the answer you were looking for. The answer you were looking for was God Hates Astronauts number one from Ryan Brown. There's an E on there, so I tried to do that. Mm-hmm. With colors by Jordan Boyd and letters by Chris Crank and also Ryan Brown, who did a lot of, I assume his name is there because he did a lot of sound effects the old-fashioned way. Mm. You may remember that the God Hates Astronauts collection was a book of the month a ways back. This is one of those books that is like a fan favorite kind of book. Like, pros love the hell out of this book. It's not like Ryan Brown's a really huge name. I think he did, God, was it Secret? Or was it with Jonathan Hickman? I'm trying to remember which
book
it was.
Sounds right.
I think that was it. And he did this book called God Hates Astronauts. There were these strips. And he did a Kickstarter for it, and it was very successful. And he printed books, and I remember specifically, this isn't supposed to, I'm not going to name drop because that's not what I want to do. But like a person who's really well known in comics, who we're going to be talking about later, was the one who told me about it, and he was effusive about it. He had just gotten the book back from the Kickstarter reward, and he was like, "You have to read it. It's the greatest thing." And I think in terms of what people are doing with comic books, it's this just explosion of humor and energy and sort of like love of big huge ideas that are funny in the comic book form, in the sort of way that you tell a mainstream superhero adventure science fiction comic. It's all mixed up with this sort of undeniable personality of its creator, and there's nothing else like it. And it's funny because I was reading the Rocket Raccoon issue that came out this week, number 3. And I saw things, and then I was like, that looks like it was totally influenced by God Hates Astronauts. And like, so those things are sort of coming into other things. So, if you didn't hear that Book of the Month review, what is this? Crap, I don't want to have to explain it again. It's
read it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like it's this world where there are all these crazy creatures and superheroes, and but the guy has he doesn't have a head, he has a cow head. They actually recap the entire Flaming Blue Dead Cow Ghost Head, actually, to be more specific. It's like a grown-up version of Axe Cop.
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of what it is. Like, Axe Cop is just this, like, this explosion of id thoughts, and this is like that, but for an adult. And this takes place after the other story. And basically, if there was to be a plot, which is very loose, it's these guys' job. They work for the government to stop farmers from blasting rockets into space.
It's a problem. It's an undocumented problem.
It was
that
Billy Bob Thornton movie, right, where he was the astronaut farmer. So, taking off from
some folks calls it a farmer rocket or sling blade. They're interchangeable. Because what happened was one of these rogue farmer astronauts killed the son of King Tiger Eating a Cheeseburger, who was known as Admiral Tiger Eating a Cheeseburger. It's so difficult to explain this. And they want to avoid war. But in this, you find out that King Tiger Eating a Cheeseburger has already decided upon a course of war, and that's what we're going to get.
Hmm.
It's insane.
Was the Archduke Franz Ferdinand eating a cheeseburger in that car when he was shot before World War I?
I don't believe so.
Can we rule it out?
Well,
he probably wanted to be.
Gabriel Princip was a famous vegetarian, so that would have really upset him. No. We're getting really deep here.
I need to be eating a cheeseburger like I need a hole in the head.
I feel like everyone at some point, all right-thinking people, are all, you know, at least 80% of the chance they're thinking, I'd rather be eating a cheeseburger right now.
I could see that.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there.
Oh, okay.
See, did either of you guys read this? Is it just me? Am I alone on this?
I started reading it, and...
Oh, no.
No, I mean, it was, I think... I'm actually kind of surprised that this is for you.
Okay. I am, too. I'm really surprised.
Not saying that it's bad. I just think it's very hyperbolic and very silly, and I feel like... I don't know. It might be too, like you might think it was too clever or something.
Generally,
like,
you don't go for the really silly stuff.
I agree with you. Yeah. And I am actually a bit surprised about it myself. But the fact is, it makes me laugh.
That's good.
Like, I feel like there's a real line in the sand for when references to other things, this is just an example, are okay to use. I don't think it's generally funny or clever to use references to other stuff in pop culture, that sort of postmodern way that we've all gotten used to. I'm very tired of it. But it's done in this book.
What would we do without those references in this show, Josh?
I know, exactly. No, and I apply that to myself.
Well, this
entirely
doesn't necessarily reference things. It's not making pop culture references. It's like non sequitur after non sequitur is sort of what it's doing.
It does, but the thing is, there are the references there. It's just they're super subtle. Like, for example, like the sort of, not the main character, but the second one is Gnarled Winslow, who had gorilla arms. He was Carl Winslow, basically, from Family Matters, but
true.
He's also interchangeable with the officer from Die Hard. Now he has robot arms because the gorilla arms got ripped off. And that's just very weird, and it's weird in a way that is not so weird that it's like there's a spectrum of weird and funny, and I guess I find it far enough to the funny part that I'm okay with it. And I'm cranky, you know that, but like there's just this little bit where, like, in one of the, like, they find all the farmers about to take off, and the lead farmer, who is in love with the chicken,
mm-hmm.
and wants to have sex with the chicken, and so he made it into a woman chicken. Anyway, like, he looks up and he's like, they found me. I don't know how, but they found me. Now, that line is straight out of Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
It's not referenced as being Back to the Future. It's not got a bunch of gags around it, but there's no way that wasn't there, which is honestly how my friends talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's for whatever reason, his cultural zeitgeist is tuned in very closely to what mine is. And I think that's part of what I like about it. Now, do I want to read this every month for the rest of my life, and would it get old? No, and probably yes. That's my guess. But for right now, like, it's really fun, and it really has this burst of energy that I don't see in a ton of comics. It's like this id that is just all over the page with this sort of very specific sense of humor, with pretty good cartooning, pretty imaginative cartooning. And I think the people who like it will really like it. And I think it also works in a comic book standpoint really well. I mentioned the sound effects earlier that are drawn into it. And all the sound effects are kind of like word jokes. Like the guy gets kicked in the crotch and it says Dick Pain. Or like he's got a joust thing and it says joust, you know. It is right on the edge of being irritating, but it isn't for me for whatever reason. Whatever that indefinable quality is, I like it a lot, and I like that it's really unique. There's nothing like it.
Paul, what did you think of it when you read
there
it?
Is. I'm just looking now at some of the. I do like the sound effects. Like there's one with an umlaut, which is just fun. So I like that. I like that about it. I don't know. It's kind of just sort of the raunchy juvenile humor doesn't kind of work for me, but I like how hyperbolic it is, and I like that it knows it's silly and it's, you know, wearing that on its sleeve. So I mean, it's fun, but it kind of wore a little thin for me before the issue was.
I can completely understand that, but you know, in the way that these sort of reviews and these picks are subjective. It just worked for me, and for maybe, you know, that could have everything. You guys know, like, sometimes it has everything to do with what kind of mood you're in a given week.
Mm-hmm.
And totally. So the most escapist thing is the thing you want. I am so charmed by the tigers eating cheeseburgers. That's my favorite thing that I've ever seen. They have an army of there's an army of bears, which I find very funny for some reason, and I like that it just never does it. Like eschews structure and moving forward in a way that I find palatable for some reason.
I just like the idea of this sort of crashing down through the atmosphere into your living room with two screaming kids, and you needed this right now.
Yeah.
Like, and I like that that's there for you.
But, I mean, like, the thing was is that, like, I liked this when I read the trade because I didn't know what it was. I had a friend of mine who I liked a lot who was very talented said, you really should read this. It's unlike any of the things. And it was. And when I, you know, I want that what you got before was relatively short. So when we got to this, like, I could totally stand a little more. But I can totally see myself, you know, going, okay, that I've had enough of that. But for right now, I'm still down, I guess. Cool. It's like Mr. Show. I had enough of Mr. Show at a certain point, but there's no denying there was a certain sort of maniacal genius about it.
And that's what the like pick that. Is about. It's, you know, right here, right now, what is the thing that's most entertaining to me that is most needed in my life right now?
Yeah. I also think that I do think that this is really going to be very influential. I think you see shades of this, like, going into other stuff that people are making, because this is one of those books that, like, a lot of pros really like. This was a guy who was sort of found doing these comics and you know, other pros sort of talking him up on the internet, and that's how he sort of got to be well known, and also by being sort of very talented.
And just thinking about the books that we're talking about this week, there are a lot of comedic books that we're going to be talking about, or a few at least, but
yeah. I like that that's happening. For a long time.
Like, it's very rare to laugh at a comic book. Now there's more and more of those.
Is it a mini? Is it an ongoing? What is it?
I don't know, but I think it's one of those things, like, with Image, they don't say.
They don't specify.
So
really.
That's why I don't know.
Well, I was somewhat surprised that Southern Bastards number 4, the conclusion of the first arc, which is called something.
Here was a man.
Was not the pick, in that Jason Aaron and Jason Latour, the creative team, have completely taken the stories thus far and turned it on its head.
Is this my Black Lantern?
No, not to that degree. I thought this was gonna be an easy week for you, but you know, you never know what you're in the mood for.
You write an angry email into the contact at iFanboy.
I did.
I might.
Then I deleted it.
Not just from your own email account, like to Josh's email account through the contact.
That'd be really weird. Like you sent in to the contact account.
Like I need to be formal about this.
Dear sir.
Not the usual channels. I had to. And to go through the right process to do this.
Just to let me understand how you felt.
Exactly. So
it's a really good issue, obviously.
So this issue, our hero, is it Earl?
Earl.
He has been driven to despair. They've wrecked his house. The local football loving gangs have wrecked his dad's house and his stuff and his U-Haul truck or y'all. And the little kid that was hanging around, they beat the crap out of him too. So he's at the end of his rope. And he's gonna go mete out some justice with his big stick and ends up getting beaten to death by first the kids and then the boss, Coach Boss. And we find out that the person he's been calling this whole time, he's been on his cell phone all these three issues. He's been leaving messages, ending them with please to return the call. I thought it was either, you know, a estranged wife or girlfriend or someone who had maybe been dead and he wasn't dealing with it well.
Or there was also like this kind of anxiety that it was like this postmodern thing that he was like not talking to anybody or something.
Right.
Like, what was going on?
His Rick from Walking Dead phone.
Yeah, it was a little like that.
Is that on the show or is that just the
yes, walkie-talkie it was, thing? Yeah.
Okay. On the show.
But they got rid of it pretty quickly. We find out here it's his daughter who is actually a soldier and a Marine and has been stationed overseas. Finally got all of his messages. And so the last page reveal is her with her machine gun on the phone, listening to all of dad's messages. So you can only imagine.
Not brandishing the gun like I'm going to take care of business. But
she's in station, so she's got it strapped over her shoulder.
Yeah, so she's just getting the message. She doesn't know that he's been beaten to death yet. And I like that idea that it's misconnections. And for the reader, you make the connection that, oh, shit, bad things are going to happen. More bad things are going to happen. When she, you know, gets word about this.
And that changes the entire tenor of the story, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like the old switcheroo that you think it's going to be just about Earl Tubbs and his stories at an end.
Giant hole inside of his head, which I didn't pick up the first time. Inside of his face, where he got stabbed.
And I like this device of the dog, this just furious stray dog that's been in each issue so far. And is barking, and there's these great sort of montage sequences, these big grids across two pages of just all the fraught tension and the violence, and this dog is just barking, you know, at the end of its tether, and then finally Earl is dead on the ground, and everybody's sort of, you know, nothing more to see here, folks, walking away, and the dog just comes up and, you know, sniffs at him and is quiet for once and is just sniffing and then just sort of saunters off. And it's just sort of this great representation of just the rage and the tension in this town with this guy coming back and like, why don't you just go home? Just wherever you're from, just go back. We're fine here. We don't want to be bothered by any interlopers.
Sorry, I literally can't help it.
Once again, we have another one of those 3, 6, 9, 12 page double page, so 24 panel action sequences that they did before. But this one was really great because when the fight starts, you know, Earl's getting beaten down by the gang of thugs. But by the time it's over, he's got the upper hand. But it really, you have to really look at what's happening to really see the transition. Because at first, I read it, I didn't pick it up.
Yeah, I didn't either.
And I had to go back and really study the action and go, oh, right, he is actually turning the tide, but you don't really notice it unless you're really paying attention.
There's a rise and fall there, and that's pretty cool. And there's a little bit of I'm not looking at it's not in front of me right now, but isn't there an instance of football in there?
Yeah, it flashes to him at Vietnam. It flashes to football. It flashes to his dad. You know, I mean, there's a lot going on.
It's not just, you know, point of view kind of thing. There's also there's some interesting
memories. Actually. There's the kid in the tree.
It's a very visceral version of Show Don't Tell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it seems like a very simple comic book, but you have to pay attention to it. And I found myself like normally I look at a spread like that and I'm like, yeah, I'm reading whatever. I get it. I went back and I had to like look, and there's a little story that happens in there. Reminds me of what was that, the Ray Fox book, One Soul, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like the whole book looked like this. And it took place over different time periods with different characters, and you sort of went through it that way. It felt like a little shade of that in there, which was kind of cool. For me, like the issue, it was oddly structured because parts of it felt like, well, you're just going to go walk up to these people and try to be tough again, which I was like, we've done that several times. And then obviously there's the big carpet getting yanked out from under you by the end. And I think I didn't expect that, and I also think I'm super lucky that I read past that credit page. Because there's a very good chance that I wouldn't have. Because that, you know, where we see the epilogue, because normally that's where you put like a preview of some other book or whatever that I'm either going to read or not when it comes out later. So don't usually do it now. So like it says, you know, like there, you know, Southern Bastards, There Was a Man, Jason Aaron writer, Jason Latour art. Oh, okay. And I happen to flip and I say, oh wait, no, this is the same story. It's Keep Going, which was huge.
Right.
Because that really was the capper that made me go, oh, that was very good.
It's the post-credit sequence.
Yeah.
Stick around.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is,
she's joining the Avengers.
I assume that's where this is. That's where this has to go, right? I mean, he works for Marvel.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that Monica Rambeau? Isn't his daughter Monica Rambeau?
She could be.
I think that's, again, you know, I don't know how the legal copyright stuff works with this, but.
It was very good.
Well, they have a Foghorn Leghorn cartoon on in the hospital. So,
yes, they did.
I was like, that's very clearly the little Chicken Hawk character from Foghorn Leghorn. So,
very good issue. The Punisher number 10 from Nathan Edmondson and Mitch Gerads. I don't often look at covers these days with the digital comics, but I really do like this cover quite a bit.
That is a nice one, yeah.
With the Punisher marking his days in prison by making the skull on the wall.
And I think it's all the more striking. I don't know if it's the first one, but most of them have been sort of teal. And so now we've got this sort of like warm yellow entering into the
South
equation.
America.
And so, but it's
You
it's
have been into color theory lately.
Well, no, I just thought it was noticeable that there's sort of, they've all been sort of a type. And now there's this, you know. Someone else was doing that with their books. There were all these green, the Terry Moore book, where all the covers were red, and then all of a sudden for the
Rachel
next
Rising.
Was, yeah, that's I think that's the one. But anyways,
so in this issue, the Punisher's in Costa Rican prison, and what I liked was there was this sort of artistic gag in that for a lot of the first part of the issue, he's staring straight forward with the same scowl on his face while his cellmate talks to him incessantly, and if you keep going through the panels. He continues to have that scowl, straightforward scowl. It's like a repeated pattern, even when he's laying in bed with his hands, you know, thinking about what's going to happen. But I liked that sort of visual representation of him very, very focused and concentrated while all this stuff's going on around him.
Well, also, you know, we've seen plenty of Punisher in prison stories.
Right. That's what I thought when I first opened it up. I was like, okay.
Yep, I did. Well, I mean, basically, you know, the thing that I thought coming out of this is that 10 issues in, I was looking forward to this because I really like Mitch's art as a rule, and it's fun to see what he's doing and how he's improving through this. I like Nathan Edmondson okay. I find his stuff to be a little cold sometimes. And when we started off, we had just come off that Rucka run, and I don't even like the Punisher all that much. We'd come off that Rucka run, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. Then we come into this, and they completely changed the Punisher. Like his character is actually different than he had been in the last run, and his where he is and his sort of mission, it's all been skewed slightly. And at 10 issues in, I find myself really enjoying this book.
Yeah.
I thought this was an excellent sort of setup of being in prison and how it would work and sort of you almost because everything is so different, you almost forget that the default setting for Punisher historically is that he's got whatever it is handled. So you realize, like, I had forgotten that with the Punisher in prison, that's the place he wants to be. He's going to be able to take down tons of people. And, you know, he said something about it. He mentioned it, like, you know, normally this is, I don't remember what the line is, but it was just, I don't normally send people here. If they got here, that's like a get-out-of-jail-free card. Look at them enjoying the sun.
Right.
You know, like, and I really liked the progression of it. I liked how it was going. And then you get that idea about what's going on back in L.A., so you know he's going to go back there and fix it. It's just is really well done, and I think as an artist, you know, Gerads is really coming a long way. There's some really nice layouts and storytelling in this.
Yeah,
I mean, sometimes his stuff can look a little stiff, well designed, well colored, but in this, like it felt just a little more hand wrought. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was really impressed with it because I mean, like we said, it's sort of. We've seen the Punisher in prison before, but this still felt differently because the LA Punisher, there's a different vibe. There's a different mood to the story. And so it didn't feel like all the other times the Punisher's been in jail and it's grimdark kind of thing. There's kind of a different rhythm happening here. And what Mitch was doing in the art. I mean, I imagine it must be a nightmare to have to draw a prison story and you already are in a grid, to have to do even more, you know, verticals, you know, and you're stuck in, you know, you're confined in all these grids and all these confined spaces. But he mixes it up with a lot of sort of Dutch angles and things, and it doesn't go overboard with it, because you totally can with Dutch angles, but keeps it from feeling too vertical, too up and down. Too many. It would be like all crosshatches if you did it, you know, if you set the tripod up and just steady, and did everything level. Actually, doing some canted angles like that. I also, outside of the prison, I like the scene where was it Lou from the diner, gets killed or beaten up at the end. Well, I guess he gets shot because the guy has a gun, but that sequence is great. The way they end that sequence, where the two kids stop him from locking up the diner, and you just see the shadows on the ground. I thought that was really cinematic and interesting.
Yeah, he's getting stomped.
I also really like the face of that one really skinny thug. He reminded me of that dude from Breaking Bad.
Skinny Pete.
And I think, like way too often, like thugs in comic books are just big, you know, hulking dudes. And in that, I was like, that's a really nice, real face.
Right.
You know, it was just sort of a different body type. And then, you know, it almost gets dark as you keep going through it. Like the whole book goes to nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
It starts in the day, and you've got sort of this blue and red thing going on in the prison. And then by the time you come back to L.A. at the end, it's sort of, you know, dusk and then nighttime and then the lights of the sky. It's a really nice progression. It's really gorgeous.
Wide open, let's burn down L.A. It's sort of the inverse of the last panel. Listen,
we've already got fire problems.
I was going to say, that's not going to be tough.
If they just let nature take its course,
yeah,
going to probably burn anyway from the wildfires. So.
Oh, thanks. You did the thing we knew was going to happen anyway.
You might as well take all the water while you're at it.
I hope you brought your own water.
That's your editor's note. Let's help burn down L.A. Let's hasten the burning of L.A.
Let's get the burn past the freeways.
Oh, it's just like get pull the Band-Aid off. Let's get it over with so we can move forward.
Mm-hmm. But I was going to say that last page it's sort of like the inverse of the last page, at least for now, of Fell, where it's sort of that wide open hopefulness looking up at the sky, and this is very bleak and muddy grays in there. I like how the page is rendered, too.
You've got Fell on the brain. It's the second Fell mention you mentioned in the last 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing. I just found it interesting.
I love that book. I came across it while I was dusting. So.
He's unrequited with Fell. That's why.
Mm-hmm.
The Superior Foes of Spider-Man 15, is this the final issue?
I believe so. It had every evidence of being a final issue that was not supposed to be a final issue.
All right. Okay. Well, you guys talk about that. Basic. While I look up, make sure that's true.
Well, I didn't read it, so.
Well, this is the Nick Spencer. Nick Spencer just like really going out of the. I don't want to say the comfort zone, but the typical stuff that we've seen from him over the years, and delivering a really fun hijinks kind of wacky book that exists deeply within Marvel continuity and tone. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, 15 issues is no small thing, and it was really fun. And these characters who we did not know.
It's not the last issue.
It isn't, really.
You get two more.
You're kidding me. Because basically, what happens here is that the gang sort of gets back together. They take down Shocker, who had the head of Sylvia Silvermane, and they go, you know what, that's it. We're totally a team, and we are really going to do this together this time. And then you sort of cut to each of them making an offer to somebody else to screw the other people over. And then, like, the last page is like, it looks like a quick series wrap-up. I suppose we just got to stick together, and it's a big like montage. It looks like it was tacked on at the end.
I think there's still much more fun to be had. They've got they're double and triple crossing each other. It's I think there's.
It felt like they were just leaving that out there, like a freeze frame.
Mm-hmm. I could see.
Oh
that,
no!
No, we got
that's,
some.
That's what it felt like to me. But if there's more, that's totally cool. But you know what? In that time, I think that the trade just came out recently. And this book was so good, and I don't see people talking about it very much, and they should be. So any chance I get from now to then to sort of beat the drum, I suppose it's too late, but I think people should just get out there and enjoy it, and they should get their credit.
I'm heartened in the fact that apparently when they announced that it was ending, that mm-hmm. Spencer said, you know, this is the story that we wanted to tell. Like, if there was, you know, desire for that to continue, they could obviously come up with more story, but this is the story they wanted to tell from the beginning, so they get to do that. Didn't necessarily get that with like something like Thor the Mighty Avenger. That was mm-hmm. cut off, you know, and there were more issues to that story. But
it was sometime in 2014 that Paul began to fixate on series from and it ended pretty shortly.
Just bitter, raging.
By 2015, it's pretty much all he could talk about. It was just like, and another thing about Dead Enders, 4,000 words.
Panels is really all about series.
I've
used to
turned
be.
30 and
oh, you turned 30 and now you're looking back. Oh, okay, welcome to the club.
You know what? October is Howard the Duck month. Deal with it. It just keeps going.
I can do that.
But yeah, besides that, it was another really good issue. Like, it was a good... I read a lot of good books this week.
They buried Shocker.
I loved it. Alive.
They buried
him
alive.
While they talked about him, affectionately.
I love while Overdrive. They buried him. Last issue was an Overdrive issue and talking about how his powers work. And it's nanobacteria. And so basically he can soup up anything. So he has like a wheelbarrow that they're using to carry his body to dump him in this mm-hmm. grave. And then he's able to overdrive it into, you know, a big piece of construction equipment to dig out the grave. And it's just, they had a barroom brawl in here where they all got to use their powers. And Boomerang
Look at that outside of the graveyard. You see him, he's transforming the wheelbarrow, right. They put the sound effect backhoe in. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, that's all over God Hates Astronauts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a thing that didn't happen a lot recently, and I'm seeing it constantly now.
But it's sort of like the height of them as a group and getting along and being happy, and they have this small victory of this barroom brawl, and then you reveal that everybody's betraying the others. And then one of them, I can't remember the name, the speedster, I can't think of...
Quicksilver.
No, but anyways, he's...
The Flash?
Who? They're basically...
Max Mercury.
One from Young Avengers?
That one.
Who's Quicksilver's son?
They had to contrive, you know, someone for him, Madame
MPH,
to talk to, because they hadn't, you know, addressed, like... A possible person for him to be, you know, colluding with to backstab
Quick?
The others.
Ooh, good one. Bart?
It's a great book.
Finally, Wolverine's going to die. Death of Wolverine number one is almost more impressive for the fact that it culminates the ascendancy of Charles Soule. Mm-hmm. Here you go. You take the big event and Steve McNiven. Have fun.
Speed Demon is his name.
In what feels like record time. like people keep getting event books earlier and earlier in their career, and there's no doubt that he's earned it in a short amount of time. But here's the reins. Go
is
with it.
An event book if no one's talking about it.
It's a Marvel. It's their event book anyway.
Like, is it supposed to? Because original Sin still happening.
This is a character event.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't mean in the specific sense, but it's, you know, they're gonna put out their PR full court press. They're going to try to get this into mainstream media. They're going to do interviews. It's going to be one of the linchpins of their financial quarter, etc., etc.
Uh-huh.
And it's a relatively big character who Fox has the movie rights to.
And
so
this is also sort of the launch of Charles Soule as Marvel exclusive writer.
Yeah,
although it's going to take a little bit for some of those other books to dwindle down. So he's working on so much that it's...
As we know, he likes to work, and so I'm guessing he just wrote those books. Here you go. These are ahead for a year, so you can print them when you'd like. I'm going to be exclusive over here now.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like Swamp Thing is going to get to wrap up in the way that he wanted. You know, there's a few more issues of Superman, Batman to go through, but after that he'll be at Marvel, and he'll still do Leather 44. Letter 44.
He's writing Superman, Batman?
I'm sorry, Superman, Wonder Woman.
Oh, right, okay.
Different love story.
Different love
story. So did you guys read this?
Yeah.
Death of Wolverine?
I really liked this, actually. I kind of, you know, death of Wolverine, like death sure. of anybody. Like, what is, you know, like, what is
yeah,
this?
Absolutely.
And I thought this was great. I thought this was one of my favorite Charles Soule scripts. I think there's a lot of great things going on in here. Like, Wolverine is obviously hurting, and he goes to Mr. Fantastic and says, you know, what can we do? And he says he's already been to Beast and some others. And Mr. Fantastic is basically like, I'll figure this out. I am a genius. I will get your healing factor back, but you kind of got to lay low for a bit. And I got to get out of, you know, the action, or else you're going to die because of your fighting style and all the people who hate you. So you just need to chill out and let me figure this out. And so he goes to an island and is just going to hang out. And I love that he goes to a bar and basically leaves a map for anybody who's going to go after him. And inevitably,
that was a really nice.
There's so many great like reveals in this. Like, so Nuke shows up with his great...
Which was super cool in that they redesigned him a little bit because he just was in Captain America. If you read some of the stuff in the back, he was like a... Like they said... Because I noticed, I was like, he's a little fat. And it's that they had said, like, imagine, like, he's a pro wrestler who's gone to seed. Like, he's still kind of, you know, he's still big and burly, and he's still a tough guy.
He's got cauliflower ears, and he's a bit, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a bit burly.
And I thought that was actually really, I mean, and it's such a metaphor for America. It's sort of that sense, you know, if you want to look at it that way, you can.
It is a great design, though.
Yeah, it is. And it's just subtle. And I guess the other side of the story is, you know, this is Steve McNiven, and it's a different Steve McNiven than we saw, say, for example, in Old Man Logan, which now may or may not be possible. And I liked it. I liked the smoothness of it. I didn't love the way it was colored.
Okay.
It was a little mainstreamy, sort of typical, you know, lots of gradients, basically... This is
overcolored, old Marvel overcolor.
A little bit, not badly. Nice lighting.
Not bad. I just think that there were opportunities to do something a little more nuanced.
It just wasn't as it was just a little more traditional, I suppose, in the modern sense of how comics are colored, where we've been going simpler. But you know, again, if you look at Steve McNiven's art, maybe that's the right way to go with it.
So anyways, there's this hit out. On Wolverine, we found out that he doesn't have his healing factor and he's killable. And basically, the longer you take to kill him, the less of a bounty there is. So everybody's rushing to get to him. So you have Nuke in a boat coming out to get Wolverine. And there's all these obstacles in getting to the shore where he's told them, basically, come and get me. And then you actually get to the shore and there's all these, like, Hydra people, like AIM agents, like all the like ninjas and stuff, like just dead in the surf. And this is it's like veering close towards like a Max kind of Wolverine.
Yeah.
It's kind of dark, and even though it takes place in the larger Marvel universe.
Yeah, I really like the scene, basically the page where he defeats Nuke. It just completely went away from me. And it's basically, if you watch Deadwood, it's the scene where Dan Doherty beats Joe McCraney's agent in the street.
Mm-hmm.
He beats him over and over again, and that's it. Like, it's just like this crunch. He headbutts him to death because apparently he won't heal anymore, but he still has the adamantium skeleton. So the thing is, that's going to be the thing that kills him. He can't. A body that doesn't heal itself can't survive with an adamantium skeleton, basically. So he headbutts him to death.
He still has a little bit of augmented strength and agility.
Yeah, he's got his strength and
the
speed.
Only way he's able to carry that heavy gilded skeleton.
So I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, not that I thought it was going to be bad, but you know, Charles Soule's a good writer, and he keeps proving it over and over again.
Yeah, I think you can,
and if you got to read a Death of Wolverine book, if that's the assignment, this is as good a way as any to carry it out.
He like mentions like what's hurting, just within his internal monologue. So we'll say like hands, which he doesn't overdo it. I thought that the balance was really nice. And then after he headbutts Nuke into submission. And his like his skin's peeling away, and that great, you know, he's got this American flag tattoo on his face, and that's all peeling away, and you've got like metal underneath. And at the end of all that, he crashes back and's like, head or like face, like that hurts. And Newt tosses him into a rock, and he's like, everything, because everything hurts.
Yep.
I like that device.
It's good stuff, I thought. Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Where do you buy it?
Where do you buy it when this is all said and done? And if you wanted to go grab, you know, Old Man Logan, you could head on over to ifanboy.com/Amazon, and we'll get a little piece of the action because you love us.
That shit was good.
You want
it was
that,
good.
You want,
it was
really good.
Anything with a map that basically says what the new territories are in this new dystopia. Commandy's got it. Old Man Wolverine's got it. You know, what's the Louisiana Purchase doing these days? Here at the end of the Marvel Universe. So that's always fun. So you can do that, or you can help us by going to ifanboy.com/registration. $3 a month, $30 a year. Help us out. Keep us in light bulbs. I got so many light bulbs. We got to figure out a new metaphor, explanation of what this money is going to, because...
Well, with the CFL halogen bulbs, they don't... Oh, halogen, that's where we're going. Anyway, talk
LED
to me about...
LED bulbs are expensive.
That's true, but they last forever. That's the point.
Yes.
And they don't use as much anyway. Death-defying Dr. Mirage. This is one of a Paul thing.
This is the death-defying Dr. Mirage number one by Jen Van Meter and Roberto De La Torres. This is gorgeous. And this
from
is
whom?
This is from Valiant. You ever given Valiant some love this week? And this is, I guess, it's being billed as their first female-led Valiant book in the new Valiant era, and you don't have to have read any of the other Valiant stories to get in on this. This is also a mini series, so it's five and you're out. But this is great. There's a little shades of Orpheus here. You have Dr. Mirage, who is female, and she's dealing with the loss of her husband, and he is out of reach to her, and she's sort of, you know, has those occult abilities to talk to people on the other side. And she has an agent who is continually forcing her into these jobs where she has to go to like a sort of like a support group for people who have lost their loved ones and give a talk and maybe help them out. And she's like, I don't want to do this. This is awful. And basically he's like, you need the money. You gotta do it. And it culminates in her going to this wealthy guy's mansion, and even just for a consult, it's going to be $30,000 and more beyond that, to help break a bond between him and some kind of netherworld demon or you know, strange creature that he found out in the world and is now bound to him through mystical tethers, I guess. And what I really liked about this was that it's just a great character study. Jen Van Meter does a fantastic job creating a well-rounded character who's not so nice, but it's not exactly Dr. House either. There are things to like about this character, but she's not an easy person to be around. And so I'm excited to see that character study play out and, you know, how she deals with loss and everything like that, and see where she goes into the supernatural dream realm. And the art is gorgeous. It looks a lot like Greg Ticini and what he's doing on Low. So that's an easy pick.
Did new you guys? Vertigo, right? Yeah, I know. Basically, there's a new Vertigo.
There's a new Vertigo out in the world.
New Vertigo title, so I had to talk about it. Sometime in the last couple of weeks, I said to myself, two artists, and I said, what happened to Peter Snarbjörn.
Maybe Bjorn.
Yeah, what did happen to him?
I don't know. I haven't seen him in a long time.
Does this relate to this book? Names number one?
And the second thing I said, and what happened to Leandro Fernandez?
Oh, okay.
Who is the artist of this book, along with Peter Milligan, who had created it. Most people, he did something mainstream afterwards, but I know Leandro Fernandez from doing Queen and Country. He did the famous Long Nose arc, which a lot of people didn't like, but I really do.
Right.
I really liked his work a lot, and I know it's kind of super trippy. And this is basically like Wall Street meets like a worldwide global conspiracy where a dude gets killed. We don't know why, but he left messages for his wife, who is some sort of kickboxer. So strong female protagonist who's unzipping the back of her dress on the cover. Oops. But I really like Leandro Fernandez, and I had enjoyed Peter Milligan's work at the end of Constantine so much that I'm totally willing to give him a shot with this. If you read his bit at the end, he basically is like, this is my favorite thing that I've done, that
so
I created for Vertigo.
Economics and kickboxing.
Yeah, and like the secret global society of people.
Like the Illuminati. Who,
and you liked it.
Yeah. I liked it. I liked it mostly. I liked it enough to read it again. And I really like the art a lot. Very sort of just nice cartooning, very smooth, but just sort of a little bit hyper exaggerated. And you know, it's just that kind of European artist who can't help but make everything a little bit sexy. Although I could see it going the other way.
Hawkeye versus Deadpool Zero. What the crap is this?
That's what I said.
Imagine
Jerry Duggan.
Imagine a situation where Hawkeye of the Hawkeye book is the straight
Hawkeye.
Man.
Hawkeye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine when he's the straight man in the story.
Yeah. That's Jerry Duggan comes along and does a story, and it's issue zero. There will be more that come after this. The art was Matteo Lolli, and I really like the art. It was sort of a nice cartoony style.
Yeah, and
really
it's
fun.
It's aping a bit characters. Of the Hawkeye thing and
yeah.
some of that language, but also doing his own thing.
Yeah, it's tied into what's been happening in Deadpool for sure. I will tell you, while I like the art style, I think there were actually some storytelling and lettering problems throughout this mm-hmm. that made it a little unclear about which way you're supposed to go on, for example, a double page spread. But there was a really nice sequence at the end where Hawkeye's got one arrow to fire on a bow that's about to snap, and he does, and it snaps, and you know he hits him, and you know, there's a mystery going on, and these two guys have to work together, and it's, you know, totally classic superhero stuff.
Oh yeah, that's the one I wanted to bring up, because you get that the POV scene where he's running while like targeting with a bow and arrow. It's just a really weird thing to have to draw, but so that was pretty cool. And also I like the sequence. Wait, I agree with you, there's a little bit of storytelling, like I was like you know, it wasn't totally clear, but I like that bit with it opens with Pizza Dog and you know the mystery and going back and forth and donuts in policemen's pockets and things like that. And anyways, by the end of all of it, Deadpool's like, wait, so we're just supposed to wait until the dog solves the mystery, or what are we doing? And it's a very Hawkeye conceit, and then poking fun at that, but also celebrating it, which I liked.
Now, Josh, I gave you some good-natured crap earlier about Southern Bastards, but I actually don't know that I would have picked it had been my week.
I know where you're going with this.
She-Hulk number 8, I really loved it quite a bit. This is another Charles Soule book, Javier Pulido on art. And I'm so enamored with the tone of this book and the characters.
If you tell me that this is the same guy who wrote that Death of Wolverine book we were talking about, I'd be like, you're out of your mind.
Right. He's very versatile. And I love the kind of workplace comedy slash serious drama tone he has going here. And I love the Javier Pulido art, which really does play into it. The first page opens with a doctor and a nurse talking about what's going on in the background. And so we're only seeing the characters that they're talking about acting in pantomime. And I thought there was a really great part where the two people hear something very shocking and their faces really tell the story. And then I love this old Captain America. I love the reaction of the characters to the old Captain America. I think this is just a wonderful book. I would have had a really hard time not making this the pick of the week.
I don't want to keep going on because I know we're going behind. I can watch old Captain America and how the world reacts to him all day.
Yes.
And also the fact that there is a Jamie Madrox dupe whose job is to be a Hollywood attorney, and he's kept around solely because he brings in money is wonderful. It's wonderful.
And he sounds exactly like a shitty Hollywood
lawyer. You know what? Like, at first I was like, this character is ridiculous. And then they explained it, and I was like, all right, I'll take that. You got me. You win. That's fine. And I was totally cool with that.
So I'm glad I didn't have to make the choice, because this might have eked out Southern Bastards.
There's a lot of good books, man. There's a lot of quality books, depending on what you want.
I mean, the big reveal you saw coming a mile away, but it didn't matter because it's going to be interesting no matter anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And this the Cap stuff is so wonderful. So Charles Soule can also write Captain America.
Yeah, he knows. He knows. He gets it. He respects.
So those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Go to fanboy.com. You can find the post about this show and talk about other books we didn't get a chance to talk about, although there weren't very many this week, so there may not be any other books for you to talk about. It's a really weird week.
So I read a lot of books.
I didn't have very many. I think I had like 10.
It's getting weird, man.
All right, so let's talk about the book of the month, Paul.
Yeah, it's time for the September book of the month, and I think we'd be remiss if we did not tag Seconds by Brian Lee O'Malley, one of the great graphic novels of the year, definitely of the summer, and I enjoyed the hell out of this. What I think was really interesting, and I don't think gets talked about nearly enough with this book, because obviously people are talking about it. It's The Return of Brian Lee O'Malley, is The Colors by Nathan Fairbairn. I hadn't revisited the colored versions of Scott Pilgrim now that Nathan Fairbairn has gone back and they're doing those new deluxe editions. So I think I'd only ever seen Brian Lee O'Malley in black and white, and that looks great, and it totally works for Scott Pilgrim, but this book is gorgeous with these colors.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I picked one of those color Scott Pilgrim books up in a bookstore like not long ago.
Yeah.
And I'd completely been like, I don't need that. I don't care. Nathan Fairbairn's very good, but I got the ones. They're fine. And I was like, these look really good.
Yeah.
Like it was obvious and apparent how good looking those were. So I'm not surprised. Carry on.
No, I just I'm kind of curious, people starting with Seconds, and I know a lot of people that I've met through Book Riot and panels hadn't read Scott Pilgrim. And so I'm not sure which to recommend to them, whether they should go and look at the color versions or read it in black and white the original way. But anyways, I think it's a gorgeous book and really well made. And it's and we were joking before we started recording, it's a super quick read, even though it feels like a big, hefty, hardcover volume.
It's a hefty hardcover. Digest. Yeah,
but you can tear through this in an afternoon, and it's pretty great. So this is the story of a young woman named Katie who is on the verge of turning 30. She's been working as the chef at this quaint little country sort of restaurant
called Seconds.
It's called Seconds, with really great reviews, and everybody really loves it, and compliments her on it. But secretly, she's also working on this other restaurant, which is her dream. Over on the other side of the river and in a more urban environment, not out in the country. And so it's very different settings. But anyway, she's found a business partner, and they're working on making this thing happen. And all the while, she's living upstairs in this building that houses the Seconds restaurant. And she's just sort of she's in this transition period within her life, in her relationships, but then also in her career. And so that's really interesting. She has a back and forth with the narrator, which is really playful and fun. It's a really likable character who makes some mistakes and learns from them. I think your results may vary depending on where you are in your life, how much patience you have for Katie. But
well, that's I wasn't going to interrupt you, but mm-hmm. Let's get into this, because I did really love this book, and I was going to make it my book of the month if you didn't make it yours, you jerk. But I loved it in spite of the main character, almost again like Scott Pilgrim.
Okay, and I've heard that from other people, yeah.
Like I think Brian Lee O'Malley's genius is that he's able to write these really compelling, fun stories with completely unlikable main characters running around in them.
Do you think Scott Pilgrim is unlikable?
I think so. By the end, he's totally unlikable. I remember if you go back, we talked about that.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I now have, unfortunately, I've inserted Michael Cera as that, and that gives it a different flavor. Anyway, yeah, I know what you're saying, though.
But the world is great.
Yeah, and I think there's enough in there and enough in the world that even if you get a little wary of this character and all of her mistakes and how spunky she is, I think there's enough to latch onto, and there's also some magic realism going on.
Well, I mean, that's you're not telling the people the big part of the story.
We're getting there. I mean, that's okay. I'm laying the groundwork, but then
does it all take place in a video game?
It's all in her head.
No, and it's not that either. She discovers there's sort of like a hobgoblin or house spirit in the restaurant and the loft where she stays, and there is kind of a video game conceit in that it involves mushrooms and mushroom caps, and if you eat a mushroom. You find out that they're growing down in the basement of this building.
That's a health violation.
It is.
Yeah, and it's like in the walk-in, like that's where the mushrooms are. So, anyways, if you eat these mushrooms and you write down something that you want to, it's you make a revision on your life. So, and it has to be sort of something that happened in that building, and then you go to sleep and you wake up. And the next morning, you've made that revision to your life. You have changed. You have a second chance.
At one point, she parties too hard and is going to be screwed the next day. So she eats the mushroom and says, "I wish I didn't drink last night." She wakes up fine and dandy and no hangover. So it could be as small as that to major life-altering decisions that change the whole course of her life and story. So it does become an interesting sort of look on what you have to live with in your life and what you can change and how decisions affect things. There's a similar tone in About Time, that film from last year that we all love.
Right.
One decision, it seems like a small one, but there's a domino effect to the rest of your life. So you make one innocuous change and suddenly you wake up and your entire life is unrecognizable because of this one thing. And there's a lot of interesting stuff about that going on in the book, which I did like quite a bit.
And it's just great cartooning from Brian Lee O'Malley.
Yeah. Oh,
and I realized how long it's been since I've seen, new substantial Brian Lee O'Malley work.
And it's been a long time.
And it's kind of like, imagine, if you hadn't been working so tirelessly on this and done some other projects, there would be so much more. But I think this is worthwhile. This is, it's well worth the wait. And there's just some great stuff in here. Like, I was looking earlier at the, there's a double page spread where they go down into the basement of Seconds, and that's where the kitchen is. And it's like this isometric view of all the different rooms. So it's not just a bird's eye view looking down, it's sort of angled. And that's kind of a video game conceit. Like, if you think of like Diablo and games like that, where you're looking down but at an angle, so you see the doorways going into the room, but you're also looking down as if
from... It's also kind of like the cutaway of the,
Yeah.
Instead of a vertical cutaway like the old Fantastic Four comics, it's actually a horizontal cutaway. They just slice the roof off.
And I just remember when I got to that, I just remember, like, my eyes went wide and I just poured.
Yeah, it's a great
thing.
Spread. Yeah.
And you look at all the different rooms and you see where the characters are and certain character behaviors and somebody's hiding out. And there's all those great relationships. Like, there's like an intern, like, line cook named Patrick, who is just like, you don't spend a whole lot of time with Patrick, but he's just that kind of quiet guy, hanging out in the restaurant and kind of the butt of some jokes and everything. There's a couple of different romantic relationships for Katie for different parts of her life, and those are things that she sort of toggles with the mushrooms. And things get a little bit crazy, obviously. She makes too many revisions, and by the end, I think he sticks the landing, other than there was one thing that surprised me, and I don't want to give it away, but there's a certain relationship thing where things ended up that kind of threw me.
It, in the same way, I thought it was a very similar problem to Scott Pilgrim. Again, the main character was a Scott Pilgrim problem also, but I thought one of the problems with Scott Pilgrim at the end was that we thought he shouldn't have ended up with who he did in that story.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the same thing happened here.
Weird.
The relationship ending was not really earned and not really something that you rooted for throughout the story, and felt very strange that was the way he went down, the road he went down. But the journey to get to that point is so fantastic that I didn't really hold it against the book overall.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought that was weird.
But I was
everyone I know who I've talked to with Reddit has the same reaction.
Like, really? Okay. Because I was like, am I crazy? Or was like, that's, I turned the page, I was like, what?
Yeah.
But anyways, I thought the writing was really sharp. There's some really good jokes and observations about working relationships. And, I've never worked in a restaurant, but it felt like it was coming from a place of experience, and mm-hmm. this is the hierarchy, and this is what happens when some of them date or something like that. So
he had a food art assistant, which is
sense.
All the food looked really good. So he had somebody come in, I think specifically draw the food,
and actual recipes and stuff, and try them out.
Food is so hot right now.
Yeah.
And does he show, last question, is he showing growth from what we'd seen in Scott Pilgrim, or is it, and it doesn't have to be either way, but, or is it the same guy?
I wanted to check. I was like, is it Nathan Fairbairn who's doing the colors on the new versions of Scott Pilgrim? Let me go back and check. And I looked at Volume 1, and the artwork is not nearly as detailed.
There's definite art growth, for
there's
sure.
I think there's definite growth there.
And I think story-wise, we saw that even in the Scott Pilgrim books themselves.
Oh, definitely.
There was a more mature storytelling at the end than there was in the beginning. And so there's the commensurate steps. As an older, he's older now, and he's better at it. I do think some of his particular foibles I don't necessarily like, which is the same problems I've had from both works. But that's just mm-hmm. It just could be my opinion.
But I just think, you know, like just inventive layouts and...
Yes, those are great. He's a much better artist.
There are no, like, phoned-in pages, like, okay, I got to do page 7 today. It's page 7 is specifically, he's been thinking about page 7 for a very long time, and everything feels like nothing's rushed, nothing is... This all feels, you know, like painstaking work that took many years to do, as it did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really recommend it. If you like his work, if you like Scott Pilgrim... It's a OGN from Ballantine Books, a book publisher. It's a hardcover.
Which is impressive because book publishers pretty much got the hell out of comics,
except for a few people, you know, like Daniel Ware
there was the graphic novel explosion, mm-hmm. and then they pared it way down. It still exists, obviously, but
well, I think if you're good. A guy who sold
exactly
tens of millions of copies of your graphic novel like he did with Scott Pilgrim, then you're probably in for getting at least one book from Ballantine.
Yeah. Other weird thing I noticed, my previous pick of the book of the month was The Love Bunglers by Jaime Hernandez, also Red Orange. It's a great year for Red Orange books. So there you go.
So that's Paul's book of the month. He stole mine, so now I have to figure out what I'm going to do. I've got 4 weeks.
I just feel like it's been out for a
bit. You got 8 weeks if you want to wait for the end.
Listen, Paul, you're allowed. Mm-hmm. No one's saying you're not. I'm just saying now I had a plan, and then the plan has been blown up.
I was like, I read some stuff that's great, and I think there's been some great stuff out this summer, but I was like, I'd be lying if I didn't say this needs to be a book of the month right away.
October's book of the month is going to be Watchmen.
Ever since Paul got this this other website thing going on, he's been awful uppity.
Oh, awful uppity.
Anyway. We're not going to have time to get to any voicemails or emails today because of all the comics we had to talk about. We don't want to shortchange you there. But if you want to email us, you can write into contact@ifanboy.com. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, and we will get to that again next week. Are there plugs? Are there things? Are we still talking about?
Paul, you started your panels podcast.
Yeah, we have episode 0 is out now. So it's not the first official episode, but just a little 7 or 8 minutes.
We're recording
teaser.
This, right? Just for legal reasons.
It is called O Comics, and we leave that up to interpretation. Is it O Comics or O Comics? And
like a vague
because basically,
I don't know.
Because what the show is we're reacting to current events and the things that are going on in comics that week. So we're not necessarily doing a rundown of all the things that we read, like this show is, because
I heard
both shows in parallel.
There, Josh. I didn't hear a definitive no on that. I heard the Sarah. Yeah.
We might be talking about some books that we like that week, but I'll try
it's
to pick different things.
Uppity lawyer talk.
And I'm not going to save my best material
best
just for that
one
show.
Of the week. Yeah.
But you check it out.
Paul's jokes are all really flat because they're all the good ones are over on O Comics.
But you can.
No, and you'll hear a whisper from a lawyer next to him.
Sorry, you can't see that. This is a comics thing.
Redacted. But you can subscribe to that.
Paul,
now.
What did you think of Wolverine? I'm sorry, I can't talk. I can't comment on that.
It's actually exclusive on O Comics.
It's an O Comics exclusive. Exactly.
So, do we have a timeline on panels.net yet, Paul?
You'll be trick or treating and checking your iPhone for updates on panels.net. So. We'll be around.
Does it mean
very
you'll be giving out candy?
Huh?
Will you be giving out candy?
Digitally through the website? No.
Okay.
No candy. We'll have book giveaways though.
Disappointing.
All kinds of crazy stuff going on over at panels.net.
Well, until that happens, you can still go to ifanboy.com. You can come out on this show. You can talk about this week's books. You can find all of our other podcasts. I think we all collectively decided there won't be a Sin City a Damned to Kill For podcast.
Not so much. There are other people
the
covering
are terrible
that.
And no one wants to see it. So we made an executive decision. That's what you can do here.
We can do that. We can make that decision.
So that's happening all over at ifanboy.com.
And you can follow ifanboy at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy. You can follow us all individually at CS Kilpatrick, Fuzzy Typewriter, and not Jeff Cannata, at J.A. Flanagan.
That's what everyone really wants. It's fine. Just follow Jeff, whatever. He's so friendly and handsome and well-spoken. No, it's fine. Whatever. If you like us, you can write a review on iTunes for our show or DLC or We Have Concerns or any other podcast or panels.
Too much.
All we do is talk about other podcasts now.
Paul, I saw you had a 5-star review on iTunes for your O Comics show, which hasn't even come out yet.
I saw that.
This show is going to be great. Wait until it actually comes out before you give it a 5.
I mean, he's going to do a fine job, but let him do the job first. That's like one of those reviews on Amazon that says because the shipping was bad, they give it one star. It's not relevant information.
I remember there used to be a guy used to come on iFanboy, and he would say, great show, every time we'd post the video show, but it would be literally seconds after posting it.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, you couldn't have possibly have watched it. Maybe it was a terrible show this week. It's certainly possible. It was terrible.
The product, but... I also need to give a shout out to my co-host Preeti Chibber, who's going to be awesome on a cheat. You might know her from Book Rageous. And basically, I chose her for the job because she will make me laugh every week, and she will make you laugh every week. So I'm excited for this show.
Maybe we'll have her on when you're not around, Paul.
Maybe
see what you feel about that.
Maybe
see how you like that.
She has good taste in books.
Let's talk appearance fees.
Yeah. Oh, that's it for this week's show. We apparently have a lot of legal stuff to work out between now and the start of O-Comics, so we'll get back to you on that. Until then, I'm Connor.
And I am panels.net's Paul Montgomery, appearing, making a special appearance on iFanboy.
Oh, man, we're going to have to do it. It's going to be like Marvel's The Avengers.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, panels.net's Paul Montgomery? I'm Josh. Surprise! I knew you would come through. I thought I could meet your eyes. Number one. But it's all I.
First century, mankind has colonized the last unexplored region on Earth, the ocean. As captain of the SeaQuest and its crew, we are its guardians. For beneath the surface lies the future.